Helen Chersky is a physicist, oceanographer, and BBC broadcaster. She's also the author of the new book Storm in a Teacup, The Physics of Everyday Life, which explores the science of popcorn and coffee stains and other ordinary phenomena and links them to more complex issues, including climate change, the energy crisis, and medical innovations. She has hosted many BBC TV programs and will be talking about her new book, Storm in a Teacup, in a pair of events at the New York State Writers Institute on February 9th. And it is a great pleasure to welcome Helen Chersky to the roundtable this morning. Helen, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
It's lovely to be joining you.
Well, it'll be very nice to have you in town. What brought you to this particular book and project of looking as a physicist and an oceanographer and a broadcaster, of bringing these things together and looking at the physics of everyday life?
Well, it occurred to me that the thing that I find most interesting about physics is the one thing that I never hear anybody say, and so I thought I should say it. And it's this idea that physics is all about patterns, and the reason it's such a useful toolbox is that the same patterns come up in lots of different situations. And the best thing about it is that quite a lot of those situations are around us in our everyday lives, and you can see the sort of the rules of the universe at work right in your kitchen or on the streets, you know, just around you in everyday life. And then the same principles also explain these big important things. And so I thought it was really important to make this connection. And apart from anything else, it's fun. You know, the things in the book are all, some of them are stories of things that have happened to me, or they're stories from culture or history. And, you know, there's lots of natural history in there, lots of animals using these bits of physics. And it's fun to bring it all together. So that's what the book's all about.
It is fun. And, of course, you're a physicist, so you may not feel this way. But for many, when you mention physics, the eyes will occasionally roll back in the head. So my question is, do we make it harder than it has to be?
I think, like anything else, physics is a slope. You know, there are some quite straightforward bits, then there are harder bits, and there are harder bits. But it doesn't stop people appreciating it. You know, you're allowed to go and watch a Shakespeare play before you've done a degree in English literature. You're allowed to appreciate writing, for example, and words that are well expressed, ideas that are well expressed, without having to study for years and years and years. And so I think we can all appreciate the fun and the power of science without going through all those stages. So I think the problem is at the moment that it's seen as almost a vertical wall. You know, you either know nothing or you somehow leap over this gigantic wall and know all these really clever things. And actually, it's like anything else. You learn gradually as you go. And we also start with a huge advantage because we've observed lots of things. You know, even though people aren't aware of it, we kind of know how the world works. We know that toast falls butter side down, and we know that coffee stains are always rings and not filled in circles. So we start with all the bits of information. And so we've actually got quite a head start on this sort of slow slope of learning a little bit about how the universe works. Most people have already made the first steps, even though they don't realize it. And the aim of the book is to join those dots together and show that, you know, you can go a little bit further up the slope without that much effort. And obviously you can keep going and keep going, you know, like any discipline, whether you're a dancer or a singer or a writer, whatever it is, you can just keep going. And there's all this subtlety and complexity and wonderful things that come out further down the line. But everyone can understand the framework. So I think maybe it's physicists want to sound clever. That's part of it, isn't it? They make everything sound very incomprehensible. But actually, the basic rules of the world are absolutely there for all of us.
Helen Chersky is a physicist at University College in London and the everyday science columnist for BBC Focus magazine. The new book is Storm in a Teacup, The Physics of Everyday Life. And that is a metaphor, but it is also literal. You use this as an example of what we can do when we just add milk to a cup of coffee.
That's right. So one of the things that everyone has seen so often, they take it for granted, I guess, is that if you put, you know, some cream or some milk in coffee, you've got these two liquids, two different colors, most people would stir their coffee, I guess, or tea. I'm British, right? So I think about tea. I don't actually drink coffee, not very much. I like coffee cake. Anyway, but you stir it, and what you see is that the quickest way to get these two different liquids to mix is to swirl them together to make a spiral. And the world doesn't have to be that way. You know, if you had a crowd of people, for example, and maybe half the crowd, like a football crowd, half the crowd is wearing one color shirt and the other half is wearing a different color shirt, if they were going to mix together, they'd just kind of merge into each other. You don't see any kind of spiraling behavior. But when liquids mix together, you always get this spiraling. And that's how they mix. It's the quickest way to get liquids to mix. If you were just to wait for them to merge, you'd be there for ages. And so you see it in a cup of tea, and you see that swirl. But then when you look up into the sky, especially at the kind of latitudes that I live at, you know, sort of 40 or 50 degrees north, you see these great big swirling storms. And that's actually the same process. It's cooler air and warmer air swirling around each other to mix together. So the storms in the sky are following very similar physics to the two mixing liquids in your teacup. So you can, the storm in a teacup is actually, you know, if you look at the pattern in your teacup and then you look up at the sky on the right day, the same pattern is there for the same reason. That's how fluids mix together. And that's the way the world works. And you see the same pattern in both places.
For another example, what can we learn from a bottle of ketchup?
Oh, yeah, the ketchup one's good. It's actually been slightly, plastic ketchup bottles are no fun, you know. When we all had glass ones,
right.
I remember at the pub, English pubs when I was a kid, and still now the good pubs have a glass bottle of ketchup. But the glass bottle of ketchup had this problem, which is that you want some ketchup on your fries or whatever. So you turn the bottle upside down, you kind of shake it, and nothing comes out. So you shake a bit harder, nothing comes out. So you really put some effort into it, and then half the bottle comes out at once. And the reason for that is that ketchup is actually really interesting. It's a really interesting liquid. And what's interesting is that how viscous it is, so kind of how thick and hard to move it is, depends on how fast you try and move it. And when the ketchup is just in the bottle, it's still, it's not moving anywhere. And so it completely sort of, it becomes really thick, really sort of treacly. It's really hard to move it. But once you get ketchup moving, it suddenly behaves as though it's much less viscous, as though it's runny. The trick is you've got to kind of get it moving, and then it all goes at once. And that's what happens in a ketchup bottle. It doesn't move, it doesn't move. And then as soon as you've got one little bit of it moving, it becomes really runny, and it all comes out at once, and then it goes solid again on your fries, which is a bit, it's a weird behavior, but it's actually quite common. And the solution, obviously, as most people, well, people sort of worked out, is what you do is you hold the bottle at an angle and you tap it on the neck. And that
right.
means that the only bit of ketchup that gets moving fast enough to become runny is right at the neck. So it's only the ketchup like that's in the top of the bottle that whooshes out, and the rest of it stays nice and solid in the rest of the bottle. And so it tells you that the time it takes to do something changes behavior. So that's in the chapter about time. And we just sort of assume that time, you know, things might happen quickly or they might happen slowly, but it's the same kind of stuff. But actually, it turns out that when you look at the world, doing something quickly quite often produces a result which is very different from doing it slowly. And you can use it. That's the clever bit. You can find applications where it actually makes a difference. You can choose whether to do it quickly or slowly, and that makes something do something differently. And that actually helps explain how snails move themselves along. So if you've ever watched a snail, it's basically stuck. You know, it's got this mucus. It's
right.
stuck to the surface. It doesn't kind of lift up feet, right? So how does a snail push itself along? It's all together. And what the snail is doing is controlling which bits of its mucus are runny and which bits are really thick and gloopy. And so it is actually walking. It's just that it doesn't need to take its foot off the ground. It just needs to make the mucus under that bit runny, and it can scoot that bit along while the bits around the outside are holding the rest of it firm. So these little patterns, you know, you wouldn't think that ketchup and snails had anything in common. but once you've seen it, you start seeing it in lots of different places.
The book is delightful, but there's a great chapter in the book, Why Don't Ducks Get Cold Feet? And you address this, and you talk about how a duck has this very ingenious way of preventing heat loss through its feet. Talk a little bit about why ducks don't get cold feet.
Well, this is just one of the things, you know, this is like the question that the kids ask, right? And the adults have sort of forgotten to ask, which is really, you know, I think adults should ask questions as well. The toys are not all for the kids. We can all ask these questions. So you've seen ducks, you know, especially out on when there's ice on the river or the lake and it's too cold for, you know, the duck can't swim because it's frozen. So they're sort of, you know, waddling about on this solid ice. And you look at that. And usually if you're watching these ducks, no, you know, you're dressed up in big, thick boots and a great big coat because it's freezing cold. And yet this duck is just, you know, fine. It's got feathers around its middle, but it's got these little legs sticking out but just got nothing there. You think, why? Why don't these, you know, why does the duck not just kind of freeze? Why don't its feet get hypothermia, drop off? And the ducks do something extraordinarily clever in how their circulation works, because their feet are alive, so they need a blood flow. And the problem that the duck has got is that when blood comes out of the middle of the duck and goes down its leg and into its foot, then it's going to get very cold. And the problem is, if that cold blood then goes back up into the duck, it will make the duck cold. But what the duck does is it has the artery going down with nice warm blood right next to the vein coming back up with the cold blood. And so what happens is that it uses this little bit of physics, which is that things always flow, heat always flows from the hotter thing to the colder thing, always, always. It's just a rule of the universe. And so right at the top of its leg, the duck's got nice warm blood going down. It's got cooler blood coming back up, and they're right next to each other. So the warm blood warms up the cooler blood, and the cool blood cools down the warmer blood, so they switch. And then you go a little bit further down the leg, and the warmer blood is colder, but then so is the colder blood, so they switch energy. And then you go even further down, and all the way down the leg, the blood is overall getting cooler and cooler, but the temperature difference between the up and the down stays the same, so energy goes across from one to the other. So effectively, the blood can go all the way down into the foot and back up, but the energy never goes all the way down, because it gets switched before it gets to the bottom. So the duck's feet are actually extremely cold, but the top of the duck's legs is extremely warm. Mm. And because of this heat exchanging process, the properly hot never touches the properly cold, and the duck, by the time the blood goes back up, has nice warm blood again. And it's called a countercurrent heat exchanger. It's a very long word. But it's just a beautiful idea. And it's, you know, evolution has brought it because it's practically useful. That's what lets a duck, you know, it's a survival trait, because if it, you know, if the middle of a duck got cold, then the duck would die. So this clever little physics idea is helping keep ducks warm, which is a nice thought.
It certainly is. You know, you have, this book has 9 chapters. 8 of the chapters is just filled with some of the examples that we've just talked about. But, and this is where you're a miracle worker, because in the final chapter, you bring it all together. You assemble this mosaic of physical patterns into a whole, this pattern, an interlocking pattern that basically has generated our 3 life support systems: the human body, human civilization, and the planet Earth. So you bring it all together.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, there's lots of reasons for being interested in science and studying science. And it is, you know, there's curiosity, and it's fun, and it's interesting, and it's satisfying, and all of that. And then there's a sort of pragmatic argument, which is that this stuff is helping keep us alive, like our body is keeping us alive, and so is our planet, and so is the infrastructure of our civilization. And we probably should understand how they work if we want to keep them going. So I think it's really important to see these little bits of science in the context of what's keeping us alive. So it was quite good fun at the end of the book, because this is the great secret that scientists never tell anyone, really. It's that science isn't about this pile of facts or even about the tools, but it changes your perspective on the world. Because suddenly, instead of lots of independent things happening for confusing reasons, you start to see the workings of the machine. And it's even more fascinating when it's the machine that's keeping you alive. So inside your own body, you know, if sound waves couldn't travel through your body, you would never hear your heartbeat, which is just a weird thought. But once you've seen the pattern, you start to see those massive systems that are so important to us within the same framework. And that means that humans become, so that, you know, what we don't want to be is helpless. You want to understand the world around you. You want to see the patterns, because that gives you control. And so understanding these 3 life support systems and what makes them tick is really important. And what makes them tick is the fundamental physical rules of the universe. So it does all link up, but it also leads to some quite big perspective shifts at the end.
Helen Chersky is the author of the new book, Storm in a Teacup, The Physics of Everyday Life. She is a physicist, oceanographer, and BBC broadcaster. She will be at the New York State Writers Institute on Thursday, February 9th, for 2 events. First is a seminar at 4:15 in the Standish Room in the Science Library. And there's a reading at 8 o'clock at the Recital Hall in the Performing Arts Center on the Uptown campus at SUNY Albany. You can find out more information by going to the New York State Writers Institute or find it on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Again, the name of the book, Storm in a Teacup, The Physics of Everyday Life. Helen Chersky, a great pleasure. We look forward to having you here in the States and in Albany. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you.
Safe travels. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Storm in a Teacup. You can find out more by going to the New York State Writers Institute. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.